Welcome back to the Discovering Forestry podcast. My name is Corey. I'm one of your hosts, alongside the other host, Mr. Arbor Joe Aitken, here for another compelling conversation about trees. Joe, we're here. We're making it. November, end of the year, still time to get stuff done. But man, it's been a fun year, hasn't it?
It has been fun, Corey. You know, we're just thinking back, you know, obviously when our listeners get to hear this, we'll be back from one of our biggest shows ever. But I don't know about you, but it doesn't seem to be slowing down yet. I forgot, when does this slow time come? When do we get to regroup? But I guess I'll regroup right around the holidays. How's that?
Holidays but a good
all
time.
Is good. No complaints, Corey. No complaints. Nobody wants to listen anyways. So let's stay positive. Let's get through this big show. I hope that at TCI Expo, we get an opportunity to mingle and bring our listeners a whole new list of wonderful guests for the show. It's one of my commitment objectives. And I think what's going to be exciting is our guest tonight is going to start us all off, because I think we got a pretty amazing guest on tonight.
We do. This young man has quite the reputation, and we've been fortunate to work with him on our team now for, I don't know, maybe a year, two years, 3 years. We'll let him kind of talk on that. Year and a half, yeah. So currently, our guest is going to be Wister Dorda, and he's out of Southern California. But he has a pretty interesting background and a unique perspective on the tree space, especially given his background. So we'll dive into that today. So without any more chit chat, Wister, welcome to the program. How are you feeling today?
What a delight it is to be here with you gentlemen today. Really appreciate the invite. And it's been great working alongside you two and learning from you two over the last about year and a half. I came into the ArborJet team June 2022?
In Vallejo, Valley Joe, California. That's right. That was the first time Joe and I met you, right?
Yes, we met at Treetopia.
Oh yeah, on the naval base.
Yeah,
it was back to that naval base, Joe.
What's that?
Waiting for you with that chainsaw, that fancy chainsaw. We gotta meet soon.
We'll have to tell that story after we get an opportunity to hear a little bit more about you and your adventure from when you got into the trees to where you're at now. And it's always amazing to hear you describe how you got into it and how you're at. And and I'll start off by saying, I don't think the industry understands what an amazing arborist you really are. So let us know how you got to where you're at.
I think if they don't know, it's because they haven't been watching or they haven't been willing to ask.
Well, I'm sure that if they asked, you'd let them know.
I also learned from some old school, you know, OGs, if you would say, that sometimes you don't want your name all the way out there, and it's good to just be that like secret go-to connect where you can collaborate with people and learn and share without having to overly boast your name, you know? So it's been a big transition from my previous career jobs into this ArborJet world, because it's a lot more front-facing and a ton more exposure, which has been very humbling, to say the least. So a little bit about me. I grew up in a neighborhood called Williamsburg, Brooklyn. I was born in Brooklyn Hospital, so it's very very as Brooklyn as it can get, it seems, to some people. Williamsburg is a very fancy place now. It's a little bit different when I was younger. And I grew up, my mom liked plants. So when people ask me what made me get in there, she had a lot of cool plants hanging in the house. And at that time, that was very like popular, you know, amongst the Caribbean and the Central South American folks that were living in New York City. So my mom is from Guatemala, my dad's from Puerto Rico. And I went to high school. I got accepted to a specialty music high school in Manhattan called Talent Unlimited. And my buddies were going to a high school in Coney Island. And last minute, I switched from thinking I was going to go play baritone horn under a stage in Broadway to a high school where I was going to have a bunch more buddies to keep me safe on the subway. And allegedly, there were more girls than guys at the school. So that was, those were the selling points for my buddies. And it was a long subway ride, a whole hour. If you've never watched the movie The Warriors, that's the end, where the, that's where the Warriors are from.
Really? And
I had an AP bio teacher, AP environmental science teacher, that told me, if you want a job guaranteed out of college, you got to get into the environmental science world.
Heck yeah.
So,
you know what? It's kind of funny as you go back, that movie, The Warrior, oh my God, that was the late 70s, wasn't it?
Yeah, that's when there were more gang members than police in New York City, apparently, according to the history.
Well, I don't think anybody would actually ever, it's got to be a smart ass, would ever connect you with Brooklyn with that accent.
Yeah, no, right?
No, yeah, totally different.
So when I interviewed for ArpaJet, I thought it was a joke, and I threw it out there up front. I said, hey, I just want to know up front before we go forward with this interview, is this a real interview? Because I know how the Boston peeps care for the New Yorkers, so I just wanted to make sure they laughed. And they said, no, this is a real interview. I was like, all right, good to well, know.
How did you get from Brooklyn to California? What career? What made you think? I mean, there are bigger trees in California, the nicer weather, so I'm going, or what?
So I have been working for about 8 years with the City of New York Department of Parks and Rec, and before that, I was a red carded forestry tech with the National Park Service out of the Gateway National Recreation Area. So I was doing a lot of street work. I was doing, first they were called street trees under the Central Forestry, Horticulture, and Natural Resources Group for the city, New York City Parks Department. And I did tree planting contracts. I did tree grate installation contracts. I did cobblestone paving installation contracts. I consulted on, like, you know, when they take apart a whole street or a whole roadway and they do it back together with the Department of Design and Construction, I consulted on that stuff. I did storms. And then ultimately, I wound up being in charge of tree preservation around construction. I was the forestry permit manager, the first official forestry permit manager that the city had. We had badges. We issued summonses. We did trainings on that. And I got to a point in the career where it was a cool job and I wanted to grow more. And clearly we all want to grow monetarily on top of responsibility. So this opportunity in Santa Monica came up where they had some public distrust, some people retired, and they needed to restore some face and the urban forestry program. Even though the predecessors, I'll give them some respect, they had a great, they had two great climber pruners. They called them tree trimmers in California. In New York, they call them climber pruners on staff. And we had a third groundskeeper. And they had a full crew. They ran their own stuff. But things just got sticky. And it seems like, things went another direction. So we came and kind of gave them a facelift. So I rewrote their tree preservation around construction document while I was there and updated their urban forestry master plan, which is things that are great to for us as we continue to work with places to update their systems. So I'm an operations-based guy. And the California job went from the whole city of New York, 150 phone calls a day, you know, like so many inspections a day or needed to be done a day, to 35,000 trees, right? Brooklyn is 99 square miles. Santa Monica was 8 square miles. So as a youngster, I was like, oh, this is going to be cake, you know, not understanding the customer profile being very similar to like the Manhattan customer profile. But aside from that, then I was working on the drought, which was a great career, advancement for me. And then the Mediterranean climate tree profile. So it went from the Northeast hardwoods, which is like something like 70-80%. I can get fact checked on that. But in undergrad, I was told at the College of Environmental Science and Forestry that the Northeastern hardwood forest does represent the majority of the forest that you would deal with if you're in the continental United States. And so when I came out to Cali, once I achieved that job, I earned that job, position, boom, okay. Rubber meets the road. It was learning all the new profiles, learning what roots I can and cannot cut, understanding the differences in a drier climate, right? Cutting roots in the Northeast is like unheard of, right? Because it's automatically like you're destining the tree almost to death because of the decay and the impact of the moisture, right? So it was very different. And chainsaws are revving out here year round. I never saw below 42, but there's other parts of Cali that do get a little colder, but it's busy in the SoCal. So I was living more in the Los Angeles area for about 7 years.
Okay. Well, let's I'm sorry, Joe. Go for it.
I just want to know, do you still got your badge?
Nah, man, but my number was 101 because I was taking everybody to school at the time when I had to stop people with these unclassified excavations, unpermitted prunes, or, you know, like on the other random tree damage. You know, some of it was innocent and they just needed somebody like me to guide them along, which is something I learned in the career, is that like first I thought I was like this, like almost like a cop, right? I was out there busting people for damaging trees, which I cared about.
And the reason I asked that, Wister, is because I could appreciate how much New York cared about their trees enough to give you that responsibility to hammer down on someone if they're doing something not right. So that's the only reason I brought it up. Not just a smart ass Joe comment, but.
Well, once a tree was past like 26, 28 inches, according to their trunk formula method, the trees were worth like $100,000. So the value is significant. You have to think about it, right? Some of these parts in New York City are residential, industrial, and then highly, highly, like, right, you're thinking of like what you see on TV, right? Like Midtown Manhattan, where if there are trees, they may not look as big because of all the environmental stresses, right? So you have constant vibration in some parts of New York City based on the subway underneath and the trucks driving by. So a honey locust can be 12 inches, but can be significantly older than a 12-inch honey locust somewhere else growing in an open field.
Wow.
And getting the diversity was a cool thing too. I ran 7 out of 10 years of a custom grow contract where we custom grew 2.5 to 3 inch bald and burlap, a little two to two and a half, and then a little bit of 3 to 3.5 bald and burlap trees for Million Trees NYC, which was 220,000 curbside trees, and the rest was some other types of plantings. Wow. It was cool, man. When I left the city, I think we were around at the 200,000 tree mark. So I did a fair amount of work for that place, and it was very rewarding. Every time I drive by, I see a construction site that where we saved the tree or the tree's no longer there. You know, it's very interesting.
So let's dive into that a little bit, because it sounds like you went from kind of an authoritative position to an educating position, but you've always had this construction and this, we call it like construction or tree preservation aspect of it. Can you talk a little bit more about that? I don't think Joe and I don't think we've ever really covered that on the show.
Yeah, so when I started, I was doing these tree planting contracts, and it was, man, every contract was like 800, 900 trees, $1 million, or $800,000, or 600,000 per season throughout the whole city, right? A whole handful of contracts. And then in 2008, the city created a new zoning ordinance where every new development, major alteration type one and major alteration type two, greater than 20%, had to plant one tree for every 25 linear foot of the frontage of the property. So the average property, probably 25, 30 foot frontage, right? So maybe one tree. And then the bigger the building, the more frontage, the more trees. And then it got even stickier because, like, let's say there's an existing tree to preserve. So they had to preserve that one. And maybe one other tree fit because the tree was really big. Or there was like a bus stop and you couldn't plant. So you had to either physically plant somewhere else in the area or you had to pay. And the city would take the money and plant trees. So there was like no getting away from this planting ordinance, which was huge at that time. And if you think about the development, you had 2008, right? Banks crashing, right? And a lot of money moving and going through all these different avenues. And then you have one of the busiest cities in the world, right? That they didn't care if their funding got frozen because they were being privately funded. So every new application coming in after that date, it was like April something, 2008, had to have a site plan, the trees being preserved, the trees being projected to be removed and paid, you know, and compensated for, which didn't include. So if you cut a tree down and you had to plant four, that didn't include the four you had to plant for the property, let's say 100 foot tree.
Oh.
It was very interesting. So I got called an extortionist sometimes.
Yeah.
But it was, so the real thing was making sure, one, I had to kind of like be a little firm with what I was doing because I needed to make sure that the things were being done correctly because it was a new system and I felt like a lot of responsibility. There were other arborists that were great arborists doing it in different boroughs. I just wound up being able to attain the position later on. And then you have to guide these people because, you know, they want to do certain things and there's a lot of layers to every development, right? You have your GC, you have all the layers of subs, right? You have your planning, you have your demolition, you have your erection, right? And you have your closeout. And sometimes the concrete company at the closeout could be the one that messes up the whole gig and the company did they jumped through every hurdle for you for 2-3 years on a job. And then the sub, for whatever reason, maybe they weren't being watched or not being watched, you know, got a little egregious on roots when they were pouring the new sidewalk. So then what do you do, right? As an arborist, you have to be able to, number one, make sure that you know the species profile and be able to say whether this tree can live or not. And two, provide the mitigation options, which is kind of cutting edge, right? Because if you're going to give somebody a sign off, in essence, they're walking away from that job and they're going to build the next one. But the tree is still owned by the entity, right? In this instance, it was the Parks Department or whatever town you work for or county you live in, you know, or yourself, right? In some entities, right? You own the tree. So having, I used to defer a lot to plant healthcare arborists, and I used to work with people that I trusted that they felt that they could navigate some system that the tree would still live versus them just saying, we'll do it and nothing happens and then the tree's dead, right?
Yeah. So, this was just the city of New York and all the boroughs within it.
All the five boroughs.
Now, who was responsible for taking the initiative in 2008 to start something like this? Because it's pretty revolutionary. And so someone had foresight to realize the value of the urban forestry then.
I'm very thankful. I worked with some pretty solid leaders at the time. And I think it was a collaborative effort because at the same time that was happening, the Million Trees NYC was funding as a result of something called Trees for Public Health. So they had isolated through these like heat island maps and these asthma data that kids were accumulating more asthma in places that had less canopy coverage.
Wow.
So the funding for what was called block planting, whereas you're flooding certain neighborhoods with trees versus planting trees because people want them or because you're identifying these like recent removals or empty tree wells, right? Or empty tree pits.
Sure.
So the major bulk of that funding for that Million Trees NYC was as a result of that data, which is super cool to be a part of because I was what was called a service request contract person. And other people, they called it block planting, right? They just gave them a map and you just marched that whole street and you put flyers out and you got all the utilities called out and you best planted the whole block, what was called 100% canopy stocking level, which is interesting because like every 25 feet can sound too close, right? And some instances, 50 feet is an appropriate spacing level pending the species of what you're planting. So I do believe it took a lot of communication amongst us, especially when I was procuring trees with other arborists, because I knew who would put the right thing in the right place. And I had a couple cool arborists that I knew to give oddball trees to. I mean, I'm talking about 4-foot grafted witch hazel trees, you know, columnar species, a lot of, you know, like, I remember I bought some Central Park Splendor Elms. I had this farm that they had a test plot. And once the test was over, they sold me some really like trees that nobody else had because they were tested. Like they were doing 6-foot graft cherries on different types of stems. I did this Halle Jo Levette on this like exfoliating bark privet stem. It was super cool, man. And this, what was challenging about it is that if it didn't make it in the site, you had to replace it with something else. So if you had a design, it can get compromising, which is good for all the designers listening. But like that construction part was like, basically I learned that when you work for a municipality or an entity like that, you're a steward, right? You're grabbing that baton and you're running with it and you're hoping that you give the baton to the next person ahead of the race. So you're not here to give people a hard time on their projects. You're here to help them close their job out so that they can go to the next project and continue enhancing whatever community it is that you're working around. So once I dialed that in, you know, I think I got a lot more friendly but because I had a stern upfront, they weren't really testing me as much. Sure. But But they then valued my expertise and my team's expertise. I had two great arborists that were working underneath me. One doesn't work there at the city no more. One still does. And, you know, it's sometimes a thankless job, but they, right. I always love hearing that quote where they say, how does it go? Maybe you guys can do it better for me. It's something like a smart person plants a tree today and a wise person plants a tree 20 years ago, something like that. I don't know if you've ever, you've ever heard that one.
Yeah, I heard it a little bit different. The best time to plant a tree, or a good time to plant a tree, is today. The best time was 20 years ago. Somewhere in the same, same.
Well, and then there's a Bible verse where you don't something to the effect of a wise man plants a tree for his grandchildren, something to that effect. You know, which you could take in or out of context. But
so it, Corey, yeah, get Wister up to speed today, because obviously things got to be a little bit different on the West Coast than he did in New York.
Well, yeah. So let's pivot to that. Let's pivot to the West Coast, Wister, and just, you know, just a, kind of a couple minutes, maybe some of your pet projects here, and then we'll spend the last few minutes talking about what's new, you know, with what we were talking about.
It was awesome. I think I came to California, had to learn a whole new approach, right? Growing up in New York City, people will communicate in a different way, and on the West Coast, they communicate in another way, just like in the North and the South. And so I dialed that in, and I worked for that city for about 8 years. I did a cool young tree mortality study for them. I did a five-year look back on trees that I planted. I planted like 7,000 trees there. Did like 8,000 plan reviews for them. And I jumped into the ArborJet team. So now I'm all over California and Hawaii, helping systems just like that enhance their plant health care and their forestry programs, right? Sometimes it has nothing to do with plant healthcare, sometimes it has to do with just other operational support for their teams.
Yeah, business practices in general, especially bringing the experience and the perspective that you've had and that you've gathered over the years, I'm sure is invaluable. And maybe you want to speak a little bit to what you're working on with ISA?
Yeah. So I've always been pretty close to the Western chapter. When I came out here, they were very welcoming of me. It was a big, you know, a big interface for people to see somebody coming from the other side of the country and kind of jumping into their network. Some people are more welcoming than others at times, which is natural. But I was very grateful for the Western chapter, and they seem to have been rolling out this new program called Arboleros. And Arboleros is looking to be the Spanish speaking conduit for the Western chapter. Huh. And they kind of started out right before the pandemic, and I'm hoping and looking forward to being part of their team moving forward. I attended an event they had recently. I think it was like at Cal Poly Pomona, and we had a good time there. And I'm looking forward to hopefully speaking on their behalf. They're looking to create a full Spanish speaking track at the Western chapter, which would be great, because I think it's also, aside from all the business owners, you have to keep your team, you know, trained up. And sometimes, especially out in this market, sometimes the Spanish speaking, you know, opportunities are rare, but they're very worth it for those employees that are keeping those companies so sharp and so motivated and moving in the business, right? It's very easy to go to some job sites and not find an English speaking, you know, representative of that company, you know, well, up in the air or in a piece of equipment.
Yeah. And what a big opportunity that ISA or any organization could take. The skill set that you have and your ability to converse in both languages at a professional level, and take that, for lack of a better terms, to the streets, take it to the people, take it to the people who have their boots on the ground. I think it's awesome. I think there's a need. Obviously it's going to be market specific, but if you could get that with your team, if you can get that up and running and it takes off, I mean, buckle up, because that could blow up pretty quick.
Hey, Wister.
Yeah.
Explain for our listeners, and we may have some Spanish speaking listeners, explain the project in Spanish quickly. And like I said, because now that the podcast is international, we may have to have you on more often on certain topics to kind of communicate between different places. So Throw a little out there. Throw a little intro, please.
It'd be an honor to co-host, pero me encantaría hablar con ustedes, con la gente que habla en español. Yo, el español mío es un poco diferente porque yo soy puertorriqueño y guatemalteco y me creí, a veces me dicen que soy neoyorquino. Pero lo, si usted está escuchando este podcast y lo entiende en inglés, pero piensa que lo puede entender mejor en español, avísale a ellos por su correspondencia, ponle un comment para que ellos puedan escuchar y leer lo que ustedes piden, para que nosotros podamos ayudarle a ustedes que están trepando y que están podando árboles y echando ganas por allá y poniendo los trabajos y los esfuerzos para sus jefes y ganando lo suyo para sus familias. So nosotros estamos aquí a la orden para ayudarle y sin apuro, porque juntos sabemos más y juntos trabajamos mejores.
That's awesome. And I think our producer will be able to take part of that and make it a short or whatever they do with social now. Wister, that's...
Let me know if you need me like to tell you where to tap and where to go. Basically, in essence, what I said, if you're listening to this and you speak Spanish and you want certain topics to be better communicated in Spanish for you, put it in the comments and let the hosts know so that we can better support. And one of my big things that I say is together we know more and together we're better. So I one of my biggest proponents, if anything, is supporting each other in the industry, regardless of how you work and whether you compete against each other or not, because our industry is bigger than people want to give the credit sometimes. And if we're slandering each other on, it's one thing if you're talking smack on comments on a Facebook page or something, but it's another thing where in a formal setting, you're kind of just telling people what you would have done without giving them the opportunity to show how it succeeded or didn't succeed, because trees are very dynamic and organic creatures and they can endure a lot of things. And as you travel the world, you'll see trees growing through random objects or grabbing, you know, growing over or under or around. And if you would have never seen that, you would have never thought the tree could do that. But those people that were there knew because they saw it every day. So together we know more. And I that's one of my biggest things when I do talks out to with other professionals.
Wister, I am a firm believer in that. Thank you for that. Normally we would end an episode perfectly that way, but I want to give you, Joe and I want to give you one last opportunity. Is there any other piece of advice that you would like to bestow on anybody else, either in this field or entering the field?
There's so many layers to it, right? From the microbes and the micronutrients in soil to soil textures and profiles and layers, all the way up to rigging and, you know, dynamics of physics while, you know, you have limbs flying in the air from different heights. There's an opportunity for people to be in this industry, whether they never climb a tree, and you have to respect that as well, but also asking more questions and getting yourself involved in those tactics and those opportunities so that you can be able to, one, be self-aware and understand and have something to talk about, and two, be able to give respect to those entities. Because I used to get made fun of a lot when I was an early arborist because they said that all I did was plant trees. And I said, well, if I plant it correctly and structure prune it right within the first X years, there's a high likelihood you might not have to climb it for a very long time. And that's okay too. But
yeah,
that's part of the deal. So as long as we're respecting each other and understanding the different industries, which there's so many, right? Ultraviolet light, you know, infrared, you know, like ground penetrating radar, you know, it goes, you know, way further and beyond. I mean, I got a guy out this way that he visits Chernobyl to go see how plants and trees are growing after the radioactive, you know, impacts from that catastrophe. And he might be a cool one for you to have on board, but I'm hoping to join him on a trip one day because they go, I think, every 10 years. And what are you going to do with that in your actual profession? Probably not much, but you're going to be able to say, I've seen how trees can bounce back. And if that can do anything, it can give you an insight on how you can bounce back when you're having a rough season yourself.
Love it.
Thank you, Wister. Really, really grateful for your time. Really looking forward to seeing how this episode comes out and all the lives that you're going to impact from it and the rest of your career. So thank you, Wister, on behalf of myself.
I hope to be impacted by some of those lives that are listening in. So feel free to reach out. I'm on Wister Dorts or on LinkedIn.
Thank you so much, Wister.
All right, have fun, guys. Take care.
Hey, great topic today.
Yes, and lots of good information.
Yeah, probably one of our best yet.
If you enjoyed the podcast
or have topics you would like to discuss, please send them to discoveringforestry@gmail.com. And please hit the subscribe button and tell a friend.
Thanks, guys, for tuning in. Until next time, I'm Joe.
And I'm Corey.
Signing out.